Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sisano. Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Ether. I'm really excited about today's episode as I'm talking to the co-founders of one of my favorite Ethereum applications, Cint. Max and Cameron, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yep. So I remember seeing Cint pop up on some of the Ethereum Reddits a few years back, and I was fascinated by the concept. I mean, it was also kind of one of the first dApps that you were kind of able to play with that were kind of outside of what I would call the normal applications that were kind of seeing, you know, just in value transfer and things like that. And I was fascinated by the concept, and you know, a big fan of using Ethereum for both financial and social incentives. Last week's episode, I had the ETH Bounties Network team on, so this is kind of going in that same vein. Can you just talk a little bit about yourselves and how you got started in the Ethereum space?
Sure. I can just start. So my background is that in college, I studied philosophy and I was very into it. My original plan in life was to be a philosophy professor and then decided not to do that and got very into technology from a sort of philosophical end and specifically coding. And I started making applications near the end of college and essentially quickly realized that I was better at designing than coding. And at the time, I also had the seedling of an idea. And I was at an internship, and it was some legal law internship that I wasn't enjoying very much. And I had finished the work for that day early, like it was maybe like 11 a.m. and I had to stay there till 5. And I just thought to myself, okay, well, this is an unpaid internship. I could use a little bit of money right now. Is there anything I can do on the internet right now, like just direct my attention at or direct my creative ability at and just make like, you know, 10 bucks before the end of the day or something? And I started looking around and I couldn't really find anything. And there was like surveys and other things that you could sort of do that didn't offer a great return on your time. But it seemed like I should be able to just, the idea came into my head that I should just be able to post something and immediately that should somehow turn into money, like to the degree to which that piece of content created value for other people, which the correct piece of technology could do. It could take sort of a piece of content, which inherently is a valuable thing, and it could somehow derive the financial value from the external world that the external world receives from that piece of content. And so my first foray into that attempt was this service that ended up being called Penny. And essentially what Penny was is you could take a piece of content, you could upload it to a network, and instead of giving it a like with a single click, you could give it a single penny with a single click. And the idea was that it was like sort of a microtransaction system that easily could scale where, you know, if it was 10,000, if you had a million likes, you know, a million cents is $10,000. And so I sort of liked that idea. And so I built that actually with Stripe and out of fiat. It was like sort of a lot of fiat technologies strung together and quickly realized there's a lot of problems. You can't actually send a single cent. It costs like 30 cents to send. And so I started looking for, you know, ways in which other possible ways to implement like complex microtransactions between users. And I discovered Ethereum, just looking for something that could do that. And I didn't know much about crypto at the time, but quickly went down the Ethereum rabbit hole. And from a philosophical end, obviously, it really, you know, I thought of it as very, just one of the few truly philosophical, like, things that was occurring at sort of the level of value. And, you know, and so I just was sort of interested on that level. And then I met Cameron. A bit later, and he was sort of a really great crypto engineer, and was also had his own company that he was doing, his own form of content monetization, which I'll let him refer to. But essentially, that's when we met, and then we started collaborating. And I'll sort of keep the story for what happened after we started collaborating for the next part here. If Cameron, you want to give your background?
Yeah, so I got involved in the Bitcoin space back in 2011. And I was super fascinated when I first heard about how there were no central servers. I was like, so who's operating it? Who's operating it? And then I learned about mining and how that process works. And that really got my attention. And so I had been working in the Bitcoin space for some time. Like Max said, I was working on a link sharing company that sought to monetize people's content that they shared on social networks using Bitcoin micropayments. And that was an advertising-based business model. And so for a variety of reasons, we think that advertising is going to go in the next decade. It's going to be replaced by much sort of better rewarding mechanisms for content creators, publishers, etc. And so what led me to Ethereum was, frankly, I read Bitcoin Magazine a lot, and I thought Vitalik was a genius, and so I was just sort of keeping tabs on it. And then when Ethereum Frontier came out and the smart contracting framework, I started looking very heavily at that because I'd always been fascinated by the idea of operating a company without this sort of counterparty risk. And Bitcoin, to an extent, achieves that with multisig, but a much more powerful scripting language makes it so much more fun to effectively program money. And so I had always been fascinated with the promise of smart contracts. And so once they were actually delivered on in the form of Solidity and the EVM, I became super into that and learned that. And yeah, and then here we are with Cent, which runs on Ethereum.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I like hearing, you know, kind of how people got started in Ethereum. And to me, Cent's kind of like, I would say, the most obvious dApp that's out there where for Ethereum, right? Like Ethereum perfectly enables what you guys are trying to do at Cent, in my opinion. So, you know, can we talk a little bit, you know, I use the original version. I think probably some of the listeners now are just kind of running across Cent in the last couple of months. I feel like it's been picking up some steam. Can you talk a little bit about the original version? Because I know it did differ a lot from what's out there today.
Yeah, so I think that was one of our intents going into building Cent was, the biggest thing is that we were both obsessed with this idea that essentially people are in the near future are not going to have jobs anymore. And there's for a lot of different reasons, you know, AI is machines taking over, you know, people generally becoming more remote, everything becoming computer based. And we loved the idea of, you know, the new job is just going onto an app and you do the thing on the app and you make money. And so at the beginning, we were like, okay, Ethereum gives us all these capabilities, but a lot of people are essentially making decentralized versions of things that already exist. Like, oh, here's a decentralized Twitter, here's a decentralized Instagram. And it always struck me as though people don't care about, most people don't care about decentralization. Like most, like people that are into crypto do, but that I think is what the filter is for whether you're into crypto, is whether you think decentralization is a cool idea, but obviously not everyone's into crypto. And so I think at some level, it's a very esoteric concept. Like, oh, we got to, you know, take the power structures and rearrange them computationally. Like, it's a hard idea. And I think for most people, it just doesn't affect their immediate life all that much in that sort of way. And so our thought was, what can we build that you could not build before? Like what does this directly enable? Like not making a decentralized version of something, but making a new thing, like a new something original, like something that's just like couldn't happen. And so we started thinking about ways money flows around and ways you could program money. And ultimately, though, it became less about programming money and more about what I think of as programming behavior. Like you're programming value or where value lies. And then you can create these behavioral structures for people that have to live within in order to derive the value. And so you can create interactions of types that you couldn't create before. And so we started having a lot of conversations about that. And ultimately we decided on, you know, what can we build in the next month that we would actually use? And we came to this bounty concept. And that's what we launched with, was basically the entire network revolved around this one mechanism. And in the mechanism, you could make a post. It was almost always some sort of request. And you attached a financial reward to reply to the request. So, you know, we had a lot of people asking for logos early on, like, hey, I need a logo for my whatever. It needs to have like a bear in it. And then people would put like a $5, $10 bounty and, you know, see all these logos come in of people attempting to win that bounty. We also included this idea that you could, as the responses come in, the responses can be sorted. Basically, users choose which responses they think are best. And automatically, users, for one, receive money for doing that sorting process. So every single time they sorted a response, They'd make a bit of that bounty money. 20% of that bounty money actually is partitioned off for the people that sort the answers. And the 80% of the bounty, though, goes to the answers that are determined to be best. And so we thought that was cool. It could create these sort of dynamics. We thought of a lot of internal use cases, but then we just launched it and people have used it in many different ways. We never thought people would use it. A common one is, hey, follow me on whatever network. I need more followers. And you can incentivize people to do that. You can incentivize people to do research for you, for your homework. You can incentivize people to design new stuff. You can incentivize audio video production. You can incentivize literally anything you could think of. You can make someone do for a few dollars, which is just a pretty cool concept. And we were able to implement that in a way that really allowed us to have some confidence that we're not going to be held sort of in a really precarious legal position as a company, because we're using smart contracts. We're doing this in a very transparent way. And so, and people are also earning cryptocurrences. And we found that at the time was a big narrative that we wanted to push forward, was that people aren't going to be buying cryptocurrencies. Like, people aren't going to be downloading Coinbase and just buying Bitcoin. The only reason they did that was because they were betting on it making more money. But they're going to earn it. They're going to earn cryptocurrencies in the same way that they earn the rest of their money. And so so we wanted to give people a way to immediately earn from having zero to, and maybe even never having heard of a blockchain, to immediately in like three clicks earning cryptocurrency, understanding the concept of a blockchain, because they're understanding at least like what blockchains can enable in a really clear way. And that seems to be what has given us a success so far. And so our original version was just that bounty mechanism with the sort mechanism.
Yeah, I remember when I first ran across it. I don't know if everybody remembers Yahoo Answers, but it was, to me, it was kind of like what Yahoo Answers should have been. I mean, on there you would go and ask questions and people would give you answers, right? Pretty basic, but there was no financial incentive whatsoever for people to give you quality answers or to even answer you at all. So kind of when I saw the first version, I'm like, oh, this is genius, because people are actually incentivized to give you good answers, right? And in doing that, you're going to get a lot better quality.
Yeah, and the incentives, actually, we were likened a lot to Crypto Quora back in the early days. And I think a lot of what you see on Quora now is people will give a response, but like half the time the top response is someone who's like running a startup that does what the question asks, for instance. And so in the absence of real financial incentives, you have these sort of secondary incentives creep into the content where people are trying to siphon you off to their website. And so we made it strictly financial, and we found that that's been a sort of good filter for better quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Drives good quality. You know, and so, you know, I think this is a good segue. So obviously, the biggest part of Cint is the financial incentive structure. And you guys have transformed a lot over the last couple of years or so. And I know there are kind of two core concepts when you go onto the site. So I just want to kind of paint this for users going to the site and how they use it. So first, let's say a user goes to the site and they want to ask a question, kind of like we're talking about so far. Can you kind of walk us through, you know, from start to finish, maybe someone that hasn't even used your site before? We don't need to go into intricate details yet about, you know, the wallet and the scaling solution and all that, but just kind of how they would go to your site and the concept of bounties.
Sure. So they go on to Cint. Okay. They're presented with a feed. Okay. They just see a bunch of posts. You know, sometimes they're ranked by popularity. Sometimes they're just ranked by, the latest ones. And what a lot of users start with is they start with no money in their account. They're not coming with anything. They just put in an email password and they're in. And what they'll often start with is sorting. So they'll go through active bounties or people have, you know, made offers, and then there's answers that are in, and they'll just sort them based on which ones they think are best. And that will give them, you know, within the next day, some amount of ether. Okay. And that ether, then they can obviously choose to withdraw, or they can choose to use it as a bounty. But you can start with nothing. And I think that's a key part of our whole sort of schema here. And so you go on, you sort, you get some ETH. It might not be a lot at the beginning, but it's some. And, you know, ETH changes in value, so it could be a lot more tomorrow. And so you go onto the site, and then in order to make a bounty, you click the plus button. You write your bounty, whatever it is. It also doesn't have to be a request. It doesn't have to be a question. It often is, but you could just post a blog post and put a $5 bounty and don't ask any question, but just incentivize people to have a discussion about it. And that's often a fun way to, you know, startups do that all the time. Or general projects will go on and have AMAs as well, where they'll just say, hey, I'm this person. Here's a $20 bounty. Ask me great questions. And then a question will come in and they'll reply to the question on send. And it's sort of an incentivized AMA. That's another way of sort of using it. But anyway, you'll click the plus, you'll do your thing. Right now you need some sort of Web3 wallet. So you can use, you know, Trust or Coinbase wallet on your phone, or you can on the web use MetaMask. You simply, the app connects via Web3 to the wallet, and you can then I'll let Cameron to go into detail on the Cent wallet and our whole layer 2 solution. But it really takes maybe 3 clicks and then your bounty's posted, and then you just start seeing people reply, and then automatically the bounty gets distributed to the best replies. Cameron, do you want to maybe go into more detail exactly on the layer 2?
Oh yeah. So the process of posting a bounty involves signing a message, which authorizes a certain amount to be spent. That's off chain. And then we settle that later on chain.
Nice. And the bounty itself, I know you kind of have, you can pick like top 5 or 10 recipients, and you could put a timer on it as well. So like if I want, say I post a question, you know, whatever, somebody help me with X, and I want to reward, say, the top 3 people, and I only want to have it out there for, say, a week. Is that possible?
Totally. You choose the duration. You say, you know, anywhere from 1 day to 7 days. And then you say the number of recipients. And, you know, actually the number of recipients is something that we generally, one thing I should preface all this with is, right now, the way we're envisioning Cent is kind of like, for our current stage, is we're kind of like an incentive lab. Like we sort of come up with these interesting ways money or value could flow between people, and then we push it live and we see what people do, and then we iterate based on what people are doing. And so, and we sort of see bounty as like experiment one, and it's been a successful one, but it's sort of how we're approaching it. And so, one of the latest experiments on bounty one has been this idea of variable recipients, where you can choose the number of people that receive the money you're offering. And that you could see situations, for instance, where you want to offer $10, but what you want people to do is basically like follow you on Twitter. And so you could say, okay, I want this, you know, $10 to go out to like, you know, 200 people or 100 people. And then so everyone, you know, is just going to get a little tiny amount, but people know that if they follow you, they will get something. And so it's sort of an easy way to quickly distribute that money versus other things where, you know, you really want people to compete, and it's all about like merit. It's not just about like liking you. It's about or following you. It's about, you know, trying to be the best. And so with those, it might, you know, incentivize more people to really compete by not offering a ton of different recipients receiving it, but enough so that people know that they actually have a chance. So there's a little bit of a strategy that goes into like choosing number of recipients. We also have a minimum amount. Like there's something like you can't set your recipients so that a recipient will receive less than like 10 cents. 10 cents in sort of current Ether values. We sort of scale that based on different Ether values.
Nice. Okay, so that's the concept of bounties, which kind of started off on the site. And I know recently you guys introduced the concept of seeds, and this one's very interesting to me. And we've actually used this on ETH. We put some of our podcasts, and Anthony puts some of the newsletters up there. And to me, this is basically content providers can go on to Cent and say, hey, maybe I've created something cool. It could be anything, a music video, a blog post, whatever it might be, a podcast, for example, and they can put it out there, and people can start to seed that content. Can you kind of walk through that concept as well?
Sure. And I think for this, I think of seeding in a pretty deep way. And so I kind of just want to start it out with sort of what I'm thinking of as kind of like the axioms philosophically it like rests on. And one of them is that altruism is not scalable, or doesn't seem to be, in the sense of people don't just do good things for other people or provide value out of nothing for other people for no reason. Most actions at some level are selfish. And so if that's at some deep level, like human nature, like to really, the things you really do or the things you spend time on have some sort of, you're expecting to get some sort of return on them, then would there be a way of kind of having an action where you could fund somebody else? Like you could give money to somebody else and allow them to have more freedom in their lives by having more money, in a way that by giving them money, it's a selfish action. And so we sort of wandered around that sort of thought space and ultimately did a lot of research, looked at a lot of mechanisms and came up with this system where someone can upload a piece of content. Someone can come along and they can think, generally what they think is either this is really cool and valuable or this is not that cool or valuable. Like that's kind of the binary your brain makes often. And so if people see things and they think, oh, this is cool and valuable, and it's also I'm recognizing that it's cool and valuable before other people are, there's a value there. And that's sort of what we rest on, is that speculation of future value is what will generate value for content on the internet. That's sort of what we think of as the solution. And so how that works with seeding is there's a piece of content that gets posted. So a song or a video, someone comes along, they think that's cool. Oh, not many people have seen this yet. I'm going to seed it. They can seed it with a dollar. That dollar gets distributed between the creator, so the person who made that post, and everyone who came before that person who seeded the same post. And so what that does is it creates this psychology where, or the experience where you look at a post, you think it's cool, you give it a dollar. Okay, you come back the next day and you've made $3 because you correctly determined that this was a post that a lot of people were going to think was valuable, and you correctly determined it before other people did. And so you gave to them, and so that creator, you know, got money out of nothing, not out of nothing, but they got the money out of that share. And at the same time, you got money because you made money from identifying that value before other people. And we think that that's basically the same pattern that occurs all over sort of financial reality. Like any company that's raising money, they're raising money from investors who are going through that same thought process of, is this thing going to be more valuable than it is right now? And so they're going to give you money, but magically they're going to then receive ideally more money than they gave you. And so everyone wins because you're putting money toward a value creating thing. And companies, just like people, just like pieces of content, are like value generating things. And so that's kind of how we think about seeding, incentivized giving or whatnot. And it rewards, again, early supporters and creators in what we think is a pretty fair way.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I mean, it allows anyone to find talent early on too, right? So if you think of something like the music industry, right? Someone discovers talent, they become their agent, they sign them on, and then as that person gets more popular, of course, that agent or record company or whatever it might be gets a large cut of those profits, right? This is kind of opening up that concept to anybody that wants to hop on, say, Scent and go on there and, hey, look, this person's putting out a lot of good content. If I kind of seed their work early on, I can get paid back in the future.
Mm-hmm. I was going to add that it's also a useful byproduct is that it adds a nice curative effect to the network as a whole, seeing where the seed money goes to particular pieces of content and sorting it and ranking it by those values.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And to your point about the talent agencies and stuff like that, you know, I right now, you know, let's take an example. The example for some reason I always use is Taylor Swift. So if you were a fan of Taylor Swift in 2005, you know, when she's just starting out, you, as an early fan, in my mind, you're a big part of the phenomenon that is now Taylor Swift. You took the risk at the beginning of getting, you know, no real cool points for being into this random person that no one's heard of, but you put yourself out there as, oh no, I'm a fan. I'm going to share their stuff. On social media, I'm going to tell my friends about them. I'm going to talk about them with people, and that sort of you together with the creator, the early fans and the creator, create success. Obviously things like labels and talent agencies do things, and that's fine. But to my mind, they're not the only things involved in the creation of these big artistic successes. It's really the early fans as well. And so, it seems to match reality better, to encourage early fans to not only have the thought that, oh, my band is, you know, this band that I support is going to be big one day and I'm happy for them, but also like, I really believe in this band. I'm going to it's not exactly investing in them, but it's a similar mindset.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think the concept could be brought in, you know, and we're going to talk a little bit about the future plans here in a bit, but I think this has very wide use cases and there's a lot of directions you guys can go with this in the future. And, you know, I'm sure we talk a lot about scalability on the podcast, and anytime we're talking about applications like this, and obviously we're talking about a lot of transactions here, right? You post and you seed and you give bounties, and it's kind of a, for any type of I would call it an incentivized social network, perhaps. There's going to be a lot of transactions that take place. And I know you guys are kind of secretly building on your own layer two solution. I'd love to talk a little bit about that and what you've built to help solve the scalability problem right now for Cint.
Totally. Well, I'll preface that by saying there really are no secrets. It's more so that for us, we just identified what could be the most immediately implemented solution so that we take things off chain and out of custody. And so really we were borrowing a lot from existing work with regard to state channels, message signing, all that sort of stuff. And I can go into however much depth you or your audience is interested in. But yeah, we're totally open to being, we're very open and transparent about like anything that's going on. I guess for us, one thing that has definitely been lacking is we have had not much of a presence at conferences, but I guess that's sort of a side effect of sort of just being heads down all the time. But yeah, we'd love to go into more detail.
Yeah. So if we're talking about, you know, if a user goes onto the platform, they create an account, they create a wallet, they fund the wallet, they create a post, they create a bounty, and then maybe cash out. What aspects of those are on chain and which part of those are off chain?
Sure. So the parts that are on chain are depositing, linking addresses, which means if I have a MetaMask address and I have a Coinbase wallet address, linking them to the wallet, and then withdrawing. And then there's actually a third step in there that is entirely managed by us, which is called debiting, which is when they post a bounty or when they tip someone or when they seed someone, what they're actually doing is they're signing a message that authorizes a certain amount to be spent. And so what we do is we're effectively acting as a hub, accumulating their signatures and then periodically settling them on chain when a user goes to withdraw, exit the state channel, so to speak. And so for us, it's primarily focused on payments and wallet management. So depositing money in, taking money out, and saying who is allowed to access this money.
That's cool. And I'm just kind of thinking about this too. And I think there's kind of a fine line to privacy. I think it's great that everything's out and open, but I don't think we're going to see mass adoption until at least some stuff is private. So I'm just thinking about this. Does that mean that a lot of kind of the seeding and bounties and the movements on Cint itself would be private, at least to people looking at, say, a Block Explorer?
Yeah, totally. So that information, we do have access to that information in our servers, but that information, the actual transaction data is largely opaque to something like a Block Explorer. Now, what the user base can see is they can see, oh, like who else has seeded this besides me, but they don't see information such as addresses, signatures, or amounts.
Nice. Yeah, you guys are doing some innovative stuff around, I think, payment channels and handling of wallets that kind of goes unnoticed. But to me, that for us to get to adoption of these applications, and we mentioned it a little bit in the beginning, people need to pretty much not be aware that they're using a Ethereum application, right? I fully agree with most people don't care about decentralization. What they care about is, is this app they're using better than some centralized application, right? And I think in Cint's case, it's the perfect example of you can incentivize for very, very low cost. So Max, to your point, like you, in a traditional system, you couldn't give a penny because it costs 40 cents to do that. You can do that now.
Totally. And one of the sometimes analogies I think of in terms of just like where we are with this technology right now is, you know, going back to like the 60s and 70s with personal computers and how, you know, there's a core hobbyist group that forms around any technology of just like, you know, nerdy people who like things that, you know, it's sort of, that's like their real niche interest. And then companies like Apple came along and basically were like, no one cares about any of this. Just give them an end state experience that they couldn't have. And then they just like optimized for that and, you know, did a lot of things that, you know, made the hardcore hobbyists like, what are you doing? You can't do that. But for most people, they're like, no, this is great. This is something that actually affects my life. And so I think we draw a lot from that inspiration of, basically I see crypto as something like plumbing or like a microchip, like, or like something internal that, requires additional work. It requires a function to exist on top of it, or like some application to actually show what it can do. And that it itself is just an interesting intellectual concept. But for most people, that's not what matters. What matters is what will it do? And so I think our focus on that is really driving how we're thinking about, you know, layer two solutions. Is like, what only work on stuff that will affect people, like not just will give us sort of this cred amongst the, you know, crypto community.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what's really funny is that when I kind of use, I think it was maybe right when the version 2 launched or whatever, I'm so used to using the horrible user experience of most Ethereum apps that I wasn't even used to having an email and password login to use. So it's just nice that you guys actually have like a login that you can log into and then everything's right there. Like that, it sounds stupid and small, but that's just something people are used to.
I totally agree. And I don't think, and I say this kind of often, but I feel like crypto people don't realize how smart they are. And they think people are as smart as them in that sort of way. And so then they build these applications that require like a really great brain in order to easily use. And I think that's not what's going to scale well. I think you got to make it. I think of everything as having like a second grader proof or grandma proof. Like it's got to be at a way lower level than you're at building it, because people are going to get confused at every step, no matter what you build. And so, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we discussed that you guys have built most of this on a payment channel. Do you feel like you rely at all on any progress as far as layer one or layer two scaling solutions go? Or do you think that Cent can kind of live on the technology that you have right now?
So I think that there's definitely a lot to look forward to with layer one in particular for us. Like, I think sharding will be really interesting and dramatically reducing gas costs, because that's something that we take on as a sort of channel operator. Is we will pay the gas for closing channels and settling out amounts and processing withdrawals. And so for us, what we really care about is that gas costs aren't astronomical, because we take that cost on as a company. Now, we could put that onto our users, but for user experience, we just absorb it right now. And that's something that we will continue monitoring and we do care about. And so any sort of base layer scaling solution, we love, because we will be the sort of recipients of that benefit in terms of lower transaction costs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, layer one, once it goes in, and we're talking probably 2,000 times the scaling, and of course, overnight, we're not going to get 2,000 times the usage. So that should free up a lot of gas costs for you guys, at least at the start.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, and just kind of thinking about this, I'm sure some people are thinking about it as we're talking through it. Given that the base application is living on this payment channel, do you guys have any access or control to the funds that are on the platform itself?
That's a great question. So the way that we've structured it is that we have minimized access. And what I mean by that is users can, for instance, set up their Cent wallet, they can deposit money into their Cent wallet, and then they can spend it. And so at the point at which they spend it, we function as a custodial hub, which means that we take that spent amount and we route it to the intended recipients. So to date, we've routed over 150,000 payments across all of our users. And so that process in itself is what users need to trust us with. But in terms of depositing money, so right now we have over 180 ETH in Cent Wallet. The majority of that is equivalent to cold storage, but storage that we cannot access. We cannot spend those funds because we do not have the messages authorized on behalf of users allowing us to spend them. And so for the vast majority of funds, we do not have access and cannot do anything. But when users authorize us or authorize spends from their wallet, we then act as the custody, routing the payment between them and the intended recipients.
Nice. Yeah, honestly, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, at some point, we need to have some type of trade-off for better user experience and speed. And, you know, right now, kind of the XDAI proof of authority network's taken off a little bit. And while that's a little bit, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, it is layer two solution, so at least it's not on the base layer like EOS. But, you know, there's a little bit of a centralization aspect to it. But as long as people are just keeping small funds that are like hot wallet funds in there, I don't really see much problem with that. I'd rather have the user experience add.
Yeah, well, I was actually listening to Austin Griffith when he introduced it in YouTube, and he made a great point. He said he goes to these meetups, and he's sharing like drinks and food with all the Ethereum people. And then when they go to split the bill, they pull out Venmo, right? and they start looking up each other's handles. And so I think for use cases like that, where it's just, you know, pocket money, sort of disposable wallet, loading up a burner wallet with, you know, 10, 15 bucks just for the night, it's not a bad solution, at least in the interim.
Yeah, agreed. I love that thing. It looks like we have something related to that on Plasma now as well, or Plasma variant on a testnet. So I'm pretty bullish on the burner wallet idea. Okay, so I think that's a great recap of, you know, where you guys came from as far as Sync goes and where you're at now. I'd love to talk a little bit about your plans for the future. I mean, to me, the possibilities are pretty much endless here, and I'm sure you guys feel much more than even I on that possibility. So can we just talk a little bit about the plans for the future and where you kind of see the platform evolving?
Sure. So I think one of the ways we're thinking about like what we are now and what we're going to become is continuing to revolve around this mission of giving people income from anywhere, or this mission that you go on your phone, you do some things, all you need is a brain and your phone and internet access, and you can earn from anywhere. You're sort of free at a deep level that you can just sort of, if you need money, you can provide value to someone over your phone and you can make money. And on that note, we want to do more and more things to get people more and more amounts of money on Sync. And so one of those thoughts is that right now, what Sync has sort of organically become is kind of a hybrid, I think of it as task and content network. Like it's sort of both in one. Like you post tasks and people do them, and then you post just content, and that incentivizes in its own way. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, one of the ways, there's other services that exist. Any service that distributes money and value between users in an interesting way, I'm very into researching. And so we've been looking a lot into services like Fiverr, things like Patreon, and basically been thinking about, okay, these are all interesting models. And for people that don't know, Fiverr is you can, you know, for some small amount of money, for like $5, someone can post that I do logos. And then if you need to get a logo from them, you just press okay, and you initiate an interaction with that person and get your logo. But the price is like upfront. And then, you know, Patreon is where you can contribute to someone on a monthly basis. And so we've been thinking a lot about those two and possible ways that we could incorporate some of those ideas into what we have now. And in particular, you know, building up clear rails, like say you wanted some custom content created, you know, a real easy way to make that, you know, doable on Sync in a way that sort of facilitates that experience, both for the person that that is going to be doing the custom content creation and for the person that needs the custom content created. And so that's definitely one avenue is setting up these structures that where people can realize the potential of what Sync can do, which is that you can all these little tasks you do, all these little things you do, you could crowdsource them. And you know, you could build into your budget for whatever your projects are, like a crowdsourced Sync budget type of thing, where you can get certain things done by the community. And so we want to make that clear. But we're also very into, we go down a lot of conceptual, you know, rabbit holes around, you know, purely crypto concepts, like NFTs or something that we're very fascinated with and have been thinking about. We've thought about ideas like, internally, we call it creator coins, where you could, you know, and potentially this ties in with a Patreon-like functionality where, you know, you give some amount per month to a creator, and what you get back as an incentive is actually a, you know, some sort of token that refers to that, you know, to membership in that creator's fan club or something. And the more of a creator's token you have, the more access you have to the creator or things like that. But really, that's another place where I think the crypto native concept of owning a token actually adds something. Like there's an idea there that you actually own this token to a certain degree, which is cool. And the token refers to something really easily understandable. Generally, I think we feel that tokens are often misplaced into things and people force tokens into whatever they're doing, usually for raising financial raising reasons and not for end state UX reasons. And so, I think that's been a lot of our thought. And, specifically, though, in the near term, we're adding a DM feature where you can, you know, directly message with other users on Sync. And something that we've never announced, but I guess we can announce right now, is that you're going to be able to send Ether to each other just in this like DM system. And we actually think weirdly that might actually catch on quite a bit, because already, like, for instance, if I was going to send $20 in Ether to Cameron, if I could just like look him up on Send and press a button, I would totally do that over like copying and pasting his address and doing it that way. So I think for a lot of people, it, if the people they want to send money to are also on Send, it's by far the easiest way to send them Ether. And so that's a thought. The last thought I'll throw in is, we've been thinking a lot about stable coins and potentially about ways in which they might have a role in Send's, you know, progression here. And specifically, what's great about them is that they don't oscillate in value. And so when people make, you know, oftentimes what'll happen is people will make like $5 on Send someday, and then, you know, they'll look to withdraw it tomorrow and it'll be like 488 because Ether went down. And they'll be like, oh, this, you know, it's annoying as a UX experience. And it's really not something that we can control because we don't control the Ether market. And so we've been looking at DAI, we've been looking at other things, and we might be experimenting with that in the near future as well.
All right. There's a lot of good stuff there. I'd like to touch on it. Yeah. I'd like to touch on a couple things.
Sure.
First, the Patreon idea. I think you guys, you have a perfect market for that. And I'll give an example. So for ETHUB, obviously, we're not bringing any revenue right now. We had launched kind of a donation address, and the community has been very generous to give us some Ether there. And we have plans to use that for bounties and all that good stuff. We've put some posts on Cent, and we've had great reception. I think we've actually made almost like $100 or something on Cent, which is awesome. But it'd be kind of cool to be able to sell our brand on Cent, right? So you actually could like invest in ETHUB itself, seed it, and kind of make money as we go along. And I think, is that kind of what you're thinking as far as the Patreon thing? I think kind of, to me, going beyond just posts and actually being able to almost invest in a brand or specific content from a person.
Yes, that's exactly. And I think of everything, nerdy philosophical thing, but I think of everything as nested hierarchies. And I think the, very much so. There's a desire to direct your speculatory intent at a piece of content, but also your speculatory intent at the creator of content. And I think that happens over time because, I mean, if you're on a Spotify playlist and you hear, you know, some random song you never heard before, you really like it, you're like, oh, that song's great. And then if you really like it, what you might do is click to the artist page and then hear other songs. And if you like three of their songs, you're like, oh, I don't just like that song, I like this artist. And so then that shifts, and your relationship to that content creation has changed. And maybe that would be the moment where, in our context, you'd shift from seeding the song to, you know, something like subscribing to the person. And so that I totally agree with you. And I think that what you're building, what every creator is building, is their brand. Like, you know, ETHUB is a brand in the same way that, you know, Justin Timberlake is a brand. Like these are just, it's like you're expecting this thing to create the type of content that you want to experience from that thing. And you want to support it. And I think things like Patreon have clearly shown that people will do that. Like, some people are incredibly successful on Patreon, you know, just making millions of dollars a year. And I think if we can correctly, in my mind, architect the crypto incentives in a way that is, above all, not confusing. I think that's a big thing for us. And I think that's, again, not something that not other people focus on. Like Steam, for instance, is incredibly confusing how all the coins work and interact. And I think that turns a lot of people off and ultimately selects for computers over people. But anyway, I'd say that's definitely how we're thinking about Patreon right now. And I think the last point I'll make with the Patreon is that in a lot of ways, these services are like, they're letting their centrality show a little too much recently. Like, they've been deplatforming people and doing other things that are pretty controversial, mostly because they're beholden to payment processors and advertisers who, you know, basically call the shots because they provide all the money. And so these people have to, these networks like Patreon have to sort of submit to the will of these centralized entities. And I think, again, this is a situation where Cent as a platform is not just sort of expounding some intellectual idea, but like showing what not being tethered to these centralized organizations enables, which is this not having to care what advertisers or payment processors think. Like, we can just do what we want. And I think that it will create a system where you don't have to be squeaky clean with your content at all times in order to monetize on YouTube, for instance, which is a big controversy right now. You can be yourself. You can be maybe a little controversial, and that's okay. You can make people think, and you're not going to get, you know, your livelihood cut off. And so I think there's a bunch of different narratives that plays into, but That's definitely one I'm personally really excited about. When I'm not working on Sun, I love making music, and so I try to optimize sort of for myself. Like, can I just post my music here? And would this feel like pretty freeing to me as just a musician? Like, to be able to, does this feel like good that I can just post this song and make enough from fans and also generate a fan base? I think that's another thing people don't have, is a place to go to generate a fan base. And so we'd want to sort of make some inroads there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, on the stablecoin part, I was going to ask about that, but you pretty much answered it. I think, you know, putting DAI on there would be huge. And then I do like the idea of putting payments on there, because you guys have usernames as well. So essentially you're creating a Venmo type application, right? Because you can just send either ETH or DAI or whatever you guys end up implementing. You know, and just kind of talking about this in the use cases, I was thinking, have you guys seen any examples of people using Cent for, say, public good? So either putting out, I guess it would be seeds to say, hey, you know, I'm going to go pick up trash. I just talked to the folks from Bounty Network, and they have a project in Manila for picking up trash on the beaches. Have you seen any use cases for that? And is that something you think Cent could end up being used for?
I definitely think there are, you know, I think we're still very early, and I think that people are still grappling with what things like seeding and bounting could enable, because they're very open concepts. Like, they're very much, you know, almost every week we see a use case we've never seen before. And so I certainly think, you know, global or problems in the world or suffering in the world that could be reduced by money getting creatively routed to something could benefit a lot from Cent. And so I think, and that's an awful lot of things. But things like specifically like charities and specific nonprofits and getting particular people money, I think is something that hasn't yet. Sometimes we see people, what's actually interesting, this happened early on, is we see people, they'll give some situation they're having in life. Hey, everyone, my family member is sick, and I could really use like $100 right now to pay a few bills. And this surprised me a lot early on, is that, and this was coming from a user that had previously posted a lot on Cent, like the community knew them, and they posted this and they got the money like pretty quickly. Like, one of the users sent them the money and said, yeah, just pay me back like in the next couple months. And I was like, wow, I can't believe they did that. Like, there's a level of trust that I think is pretty astonishing that gets created amongst these strangers. And then obviously what's interesting is that the person later on reported back, like, just, hey everyone, just letting you know, they paid me back. Happy to have helped or something. And so it was it worked out best for everyone, where the person who needed the money got it. And they also ended up gaining sort of even deeper trust from the community, because they asked for something and they kept their word. And so I don't know if that's really a scalable use case for Cent, but it was definitely interesting to me. That just shows the deep power of like what a community is when it trusts itself. And obviously if that person had not, we've also had users that have asked for money before and it turned out they didn't pay it back, or something like $8 or something, but it turns out they didn't pay it back. And the community knows that now. And the community doesn't, obviously would never, you know, enable that user to ask again. And so I think there's definitely, you know, services like GoFundMe or services where people need to raise money for a specific tragedy that just occurred or stuff like that. I think are an additional use case that could, ideally, if a lot of these use cases could be fit into the same incentive structure, that would be great for simplicity. But I definitely think there's some sort of solution that exists here when people need to gather money towards specific things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo are I think pretty similar to things like GoFundMe and whatever else. And so I think we've seen some of it, but I think we'll probably see more.
Yeah. I also wanted to add real quick that we recently introduced a concept of channels. That each post has a channel, and we would really like to see that evolve into a more subreddit-like experience. And so for the type of thing that you're suggesting, hopefully in the future we can have it so that maybe there are some channels that are more dedicated to, you know, collective action or giving or that sort of thing, and are more focused on enabling certain outcomes in the world compared to others, which might be more focused on content creation, that sort of stuff.
Additionally, at the level of when a user earns an amount on Cent, we've had some users who have joined Cent that, you know, just financially they're very comfortable and they don't really care about, you know, earning the few hundred bucks a month they earn. And so We've been asked before to have a feature where they can just auto donate all of it to a specific charity, and so we've been looking into that as well. You know, sort of allowing users to just, you know, who want to enjoy Scent for the content and the community, but don't actually care about the financial reward. They can, you know, inject that into whatever they feel like deserves it.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I've always been fascinated by the platform because of what it enables. I like thinking about the reach of Ethereum. And I think this is one of those platforms where you guys are going to continue to see amazing use cases. And just talking through what you were both saying, you know, of maybe a forum for public goods and then people repaying funds after they've asked for it. I mean, I'm even thinking you could create some kind of reputation type system as well, right? For people paying. So there's just endless possibilities here. So I want to shift a little bit. I had asked some of my followers on Twitter. I do this kind of for every episode. I started it about a month or so ago, kind of what the questions they had for you guys. And we got a pretty good response. I wanted to first start with just kind of on the theme of talking about Scent and where it's going. There was a question around kind of, did you guys ever toy with an ICO? Obviously, you don't have a token. So I kind of want to wrap that question into how you're currently funded and kind of how you plan to fund the platform in the future.
Sure. So I would say there was a moment when we thought about an ICO. You know, there was 2017 and everything was crazy. But we always felt like it was crazy. Like we always internally felt like this is not a sustainable environment, you know, that, and I think we were also internally a little bit skeptical about the legality of ICOs and everything. And so, I think we always leaned toward, for a while, we leaned toward having a token, but having the token be privately sold. And that's actually partially what we did in our first round of funding. We used this thing called a SAFT, and we which is basically like an agreement that, you know, is an agreement, the FT, and that is an agreement for future tokens. And ultimately, though, we're converting those investors to equity. I guess to rewind, we had this first round. We raised a few hundred thousand dollars, and then we just had another sort of bridge round of a larger amount of money, and now we're raising a significantly larger amount in sort of what's becoming our seed round right now. And that's from, as of right now, it's been all private investors, which we think is fine. I think clearly companies can create incredible public-facing things from private investment, and I think it sort of simplifies a lot of the process from a legal perspective, and also kind of a pretty great, you know, in some ways it's flawed, but in a lot of ways it's great. Societal structures have grown up around funding companies, and so they offer a lot of assistance that's really helpful. And so we've been sort of just getting to know those systems, like and how they work, and so far it's been going pretty well. And we're funded. We're definitely fine. We are raising a bigger round pretty soon, and so I will put that out there to any of your audience if that's something we're open to discussing with relevant people, should that be a desire of any of your listeners.
And then on the topic of revenue, we are a fee-taking company, so we don't do it currently, but at larger scales, we expect to take a percentage based on the amount transacted of all of the value that goes through the platform. And so ideally, we'd capture some of that as revenue for the company.
Nice. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, to be honest, I've been back when, so 5 years ago now, I embarked on creating EtherX, and we were never a fan of tokens. We knew the ICO boom would come and the people were going to create tokens for funding. We just wanted to go down kind of a micro fee model at scale. I personally think that's the way to go. I think unnecessary tokens add a lot of friction to the user experience. And if you're offering a good product, users aren't really going to care about a little micro fee coming out of their transactions. So I'm glad you guys are going down that route. We talked a little bit about, you know, what's on chain, what's off chain, the custody of funds and stuff like that. And obviously Scent has a lot of content, right? You're creating posts, people are commenting. And given that this is built on Ethereum, people kind of have the notion that everything's public and not censorable. I personally think we need to kind of have a fine line here. You can't just have pure chaos in what people can post, because that's going to get these platforms into trouble at a point. Do you have a policy on content? And if so, how enforceable is that?
Right now, our policy is basically you can't post anything illegal. And the part of our policy that is key and something that we're enforcing more and more is that if you're posting content and you're claiming it to be original, it has to be original content. Because if you're going to make money right now, it's a very legally gray area, because really no laws exist to to explain, you know, what something like seeding precisely is dealt with as. And so we're generally playing it pretty safe, but we're also trying to, you know, in a sense, push the space forward by doing things and then, you know, forcing laws to be made to deal with them. And so the idea of basically things that are illegal get removed, and things that if people post not safe for work things, you can easily mark it as not safe for work. And there's a setting where you can not view, you know, we won't show not safe for work content to you. But I think one of the benefits of being untethered from payment processors and advertisers is that, you know, if your creativity takes the form of something that's a little risque or a little not safe for work, or even just a lot not safe for work, you know, we don't see it as our duty to be sort of the moral guardian of what's appropriate and not, and what's adult and what's not. We kind of let the user base decide what they think, first of all, is adult, so we can create the features that allow people to not see that stuff if they don't want to. But we also don't, we let them do their thing. And I think that's very aligned, I think, generally with the crypto ethos of, you know, things are kind of okay if you just kind of let people do what they want and you don't try to control them too much. You give them barriers that are just enough to keep people safe, but not enough where you're like really guiding a specific ideology. And I think that's the problem creeping up on a lot of networks, is that they're seemingly guiding specific ideologies into their designs. And I think that that's so incredibly terrible on a really deep level, because it's confusing the platform for a perspective. And I think we're a platform. You know, we have a goal as a platform to allow you to make money by creating things that make people think, but we don't have a specific, for instance, political perspective that we want to have proliferate. And that's not the point of the platform. And so I think we take that role very strongly, and seemingly stronger than a lot of other networks take it. And I don't think that makes the network devolve into something where you just get, you know, people with really aggressive opinions like Gab or something. I think it just, it creates a network where people are just thoughtful. But they also like the fact that they're not being controlled too much.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I agree with you. You don't want to overregulate, but of course you have to take some stuff off the site, and if it gets a little bit too ridiculous. We had kind of two or three questions just around the quality of content in general, and I think I'll kind of use this is a good question to wrap up the talk. And obviously you mentioned Steam at a point, and that's a version, that's a crypto basically where you can get I guess you could get paid for content, is an easy way to break it down. The questions are more around, in these versions of kind of paid content platforms, a lot of people end up just kind of having content spinning farms. So they're just kind of constantly pumping out garbage content, and the content kind of gets, the quality goes down over time. So how do you think that sense incentive models can kind of be a breakthrough when it comes to these type of models?
Well, I think a big part of that is that we're not putting things out and being like, this is it, we're done. Like it's in its final form. And I think that that's seemingly the stance a lot of crypto projects take, is we're doing a lot of work up front, but then we're going to launch it and everything's going to be perfect. And I think that we take a lot more of the sort of old school startup mentality of like, we don't really have a clue what you're going to do with this. Let's just put it out there and start experimenting and like co-creating with the user base. And so that's definitely been one thing we've seen, is that there are certain aspects of our current incentive design that seem to incentivize, two not so great things. One of them is not great, like pretty low quality responses to bounty posts, things like just the word great or like cool or thanks for sharing. And people seemingly are incentivized to do that because, you know, on a bounty that say it's a small bounty, say it's like a $2 bounty and it's got 10 recipients and they see that only 7 people have replied so far, they could post literally anything and they'll get some amount of money because it's, you know, they just fall within that minimum number of people. And so that's been one thing which we didn't initially hypothesize for that we've seen. And we are actually, I can also announce right now, is that we're working on actually a pretty sophisticated reputation system. And that's, I should have mentioned this in the future section, but basically the reputation system is going to, we feel like, very accurately depict someone's overall
value generation within SENT. And so with that in mind, it will disincentivize and people will basically, there'll be a deeper, longer lasting consequence for people's good or bad actions. Or value generating and non-value generating actions. And so I think that's definitely something that we see fixing things like content farms and stuff, because those people will just get lower and lower reputations, and maybe they'll get lower and lower, ability. You know, people will see their stuff less and less, essentially. And so that's definitely a thought. But I also think we also just need to bring in a lot of high quality people. Like, and I think it comes down to that. That's one of our main focuses in the next 3 months from a non-technical level, is just, we have a lot of plans around this, is to reach out to and bring on incredible creators that we know in completely other fields. But I think a lot of that first has to be dealt with. A lot of aspects of, you know, we get a lot of crypto people now because crypto people understand what SENT is, but we really want to expand out more than just crypto people. We want to expand into normal people. And so with that in mind, we want to make things, you know, for instance, like things like DAI or things like fiat, like on and off ramps, like have potentially having ways where you can like start with like a debit card, and then that debit card converts to a crypto, and then you can use that within SENT. Stuff like that, where normal everyday people understand, I think are going to be key for increasing the overall quality of the content. Because right now we're dealing with the overlap Venn diagram of people who are really into crypto and people that create good content, which, you know, you're a part of that, but that's not a lot of people. And so that's kind of how we're approaching it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I think kind of getting outside of the crypto spectrum is one thing that almost every application built on Ethereum is struggling with. And I actually think you guys are set up probably the best to do it. I mean, everyone knows about social networks. People know about Reddit, which is, to me, very similar to what SENT offers right now. I think putting DAI on there is going to be huge. So I would definitely suggest that. It's cool to hear about the reputation system as well. I think that could launch the content into a better space. And I guess I would say for anybody listening, if you haven't checked it out, definitely go to SENT.co and sign up and check out SENT. I mean, I've been a hardcore fan for a while, and I know usernames are starting to go now. That's kind of been the hot thing on Twitter. I think someone went, maybe it was MyCrypto or someone, I can't remember when, and their username was gone and they were upset. So if you're someone that likes to claim your username on social networks, I would go claim it right now.
Absolutely. Great PSA. If you're a crypto project, if you're some sort of person in crypto Twitter land, like definitely come and claim it, and you'll be, you know, benefiting as we grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for joining me today, guys. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I think it's been great.
Cool. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.